Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment.
Hey guys, Chris here, and welcome to yet another episode of Chris Talks Games. So, my name's Chris, and I'll be talking to you about games. So, episode 50, which is reason I can't for me, actually. Quite surprising. Yeah, really excited to be here with episode 50. Kind of continuing on the topic I started last week with the thoughts of Japanese or like gaming moving away from Japan and more Western. So, quite an interesting topic looking at kind of like comparisons of Western gaming and Japanese gaming coming up. First up, we're going to start off with the news for the 50th episode. Okay, so there's a lot of people like the know that Microsoft do like to do a bit of teasing with their videos. Like Phil Spencer in particular likes to have stuff in his background, like for example the Xbox Series S. He had it on a shelf behind him in a video that they put out before they even announced the console, so it was there tucked away at a bookshelf and nobody noticed it, so really it was there for everyone to see. Microsoft have been doing a bit more teasing. Like, they've had a couple of more videos recently, and there have been people saying that Phil Spencer does put things there to hint or cause speculation or quite tease about certain things. And one thing that's caught attention in two recent Microsoft videos is they've had a Nintendo Switch in the background on both videos, on the shelves in the background. So, there's a lot of hints and a lot of rumours going around what this could be. Some people were saying it might be because they've already done stuff on Switch. Obviously, got Minecraft. They've released Ori in the Blind Forest and Ori in the Will of the Wisps on Switch. And obviously, helped bring Cuphead across the Switch. A lot of people saying that it could be to do with the fact that they've been bringing stuff across the Switch already. But there's been a lot of speculation that there may be another announcement to come from Microsoft and Nintendo about something else. And a lot of speculation seems to be around the possibility of Game Pass coming to the Switch. Which I think could be really good. Be able to make Xbox games available on a handheld device, that'd be awesome. I think we'd be using the xCloud stuff, which would be the streaming, rather than the actual downloading the games onto a hard drive, because given the Switch's technical capabilities, I'm not sure how well it plays other games. So, there are a lot of rumours that Microsoft could be looking to do something with Nintendo. By the way, it could be another game coming to the Switch at some point, or another Smash character. There's lots of different possibilities shaping up. It'll be interesting to see. But one other thing that has got people talking as well is not just the Nintendo and Microsoft, but the last video by Phil Spencer, they had a model of the mascot from Kojima Productions in the background. So, there's a lot of speculation going around that Microsoft may be talking to Hideo Kojima about maybe publishing his next game or working with him in some capacity. So that is also quite an exciting move that Microsoft could be doing what Sony did with Death Stranding and doing something with Kojima, which would be interesting to see what happens there. Like I say, Microsoft do like to tease, they do like to kind of, I don't know if trolls too hard to work, but do kind of like to just kind of put speculation around sometimes in their videos. So this could obviously lead to nothing, but also it is kind of quite telling that after the videos come out, there have been people online saying that Everything on the shelves in the background means something. So yeah, a lot of people have been looking at the shelves and trying to decipher what could be happening. And I'll say the Switch is a big thing. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do, and if they do bring any more games, or even if it's Game Pass over to the Switch. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. And on to the next bit of news. Next bit of news is again related to Microsoft. Microsoft have announced that they are now making it that you do not require Xbox Live Gold to play free-to-play games online. So any free-to-play online games, you did have to have Xbox Live Gold to be able to play online with people. But they have announced that that is now coming to the end, and you do not need to use or have Xbox Live Gold to be able to play free-to-play games such as Fortnite, things like that online. Microsoft's actually the last part of this. Sony and Nintendo didn't make it a necessity. It's only Microsoft that required you to have the online service to play the free-to-play games online. So there's Microsoft are kind of playing catch up a little bit on here, which is a bit unlike Microsoft, but at the same time, it's good to see that they are actually the same pattern across all the different game companies now. So yeah, if you've got Fortnite or any other kind of Call of Duty backgrounds or any kind of free-to-play games, you can literally just go straight online without Xbox Live Gold now, which is pretty cool. The last bit of news I want to talk about today is Aspyr have been heavily rumoured to be working on a Knights of the Old Republic, either remake or remaster or something like that. Knights of the Old Republic's been long rumoured to be getting a remake or a re-release or kind of come back in some fashion. And a lot of people originally did think that BioWare might be able to get their hands back on it because they are under EA, and EA did have the Star Wars license, but where it looks like Star Wars games will no longer be exclusive to EA once this current deal expires. There are more companies coming up with LucasArts games and kind of Star Wars games in particular. So EA are no longer are not going to have the sole publishing rights for Star Wars. But yeah, the latest speculation rumours do hint to Aspyr being behind the Knights of the Old Republic kind of project. The most recent rumours and kind of whispers coming out of sources is that it will be like a full-on remake, not just a remaster. So I have obviously done the more recent Star Wars remasters like Podracer, and things like that, and I have had quite good feedback for a lot of that stuff. So I'd be interested to see what they do the full remake rather than just give it a fresh lick of paint to some of the games that I've been doing. So not a game I have played. Like, a lot of people do rave about Knights of the Old Republic. I've heard some people say it's one of the best games I've ever played. So it'd be interesting to see what does happen and finally be able to go hands on with Knights of the Old Republic at some point. I'd be very excited for that. But that pretty much wraps up the news I want to talk about this week. There's not a great deal that I really wanted to bring to you guys' attention. So head on to the main section in a moment. Okay, so now on to the main topic for today, which is again, kind of related to last week, so I talked about gaming moving west away from Japan. And I thought I'd look a bit deeper in terms of gaming icons and, looking back or looking at classic gaming characters that have come both from the West and from Japan. So I'm going to compare the characters and how they kind of measure up. And also an interesting case for a couple of characters where they're kind of a mixture of both, like Japanese and Western. So there's two characters in particular I want to discuss with that aspect. Let's start off with more like classic like characters. These main primarily kind of platforming characters or kind of action games. Yeah, so I'm going to start off with some, like, classic characters from, probably, like, from family-friendly games, kind of, like, ones that a lot of people would have had experience with, I think. To start off in Japan, like, kind of characters you got there, like Mario and the cast of Mario, which are among the most iconic characters in the world. Instantly recognisable, like, even though the N64 wasn't a phenomenally well, wasn't the most successful console in the world, I think there are very few people who haven't heard the It's a Me Mario, which was on the opening title screen of Mario 64. Yeah, Mario is just instantly iconic, along with a lot of the cast that's around him. Like, the sales figures speak themselves. Like, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is by far the best, or is currently the best-selling game on the Switch. I think Animal Crossing will be giving it a run for its money, but I don't think it would have caught it up just yet. I think Mario is just one of those characters that he's Japanese created, but he's definitely Italian plumber. And I think he's just got such an affinity, like, so many people love him. And a lot of people love his games and, like, enjoy his games. Like, there's not many genres he hasn't had a hand in, which is pretty awesome. Obviously, on the flip side, with Mario back in the 90s, you had the big rivalry Sega versus Nintendo. And a big part of that was Sonic the Hedgehog. Sonic was a... Yeah, I think Sonic's kind of faded a little bit. I think some of his games, the quality's dipped a little bit. But he is still one of the most recognisable characters in gaming. The supporting cast is also pretty recognisable. He is kind of making waves again. He's building up more traction. Like, even though the initial trailers got awful, the actual film did really well. A lot of people really liked it. And surprisingly, I haven't actually watched it yet. I have got it on Blu-ray, but just for whatever reasons, I've not had the time to sit down and watch it. So I think it's kind of a bit of fear as well, because I think the first trailer put me off so much. I'm unsure about going to watch a film, but it probably will do soon, I imagine. In terms of iconic characters, Mario and Sonic are well up there. Super memorable and just kind of recognisable. Everyone's probably played at least one of the games at one point, and like Blue Mario or Sonic, and can kind of remember certain things. Moving on to another Japanese character, you got Link. Link is probably better known for his series or his actual name, so it'd be Legend of Zelda. I'm not gonna lie, I didn't play much Legend of Zelda growing up, so I actually thought Legend of Zelda, I wasn't sure whether the main character was called Zelda when I first played it. I didn't realise that you were technically Link. Link is, again, he's got stronger, he's got along, really. I think it's always done fairly well for Nintendo, but this Legend of Zelda series has kind of picked up and up and up, and Breath of the Wild, where it's changed up a lot of the gameplay mechanics, has really kind of brought Link to a whole new group of people, really. So Link is definitely a character that's had more of an impact recently, I'd say. He is, like I say, iconic, and I think he's evolved a bit over time as well. Some things don't change. Like, I've not given him a voice actor at any point. And a lot of his weapons and tropes are the same, but Breath of the Wild did kind of reinvent a lot of stuff for the Zelda franchise. And you could argue in a way that Breath of the Wild did have more Western influences, like the survival aspects and kind of more open world thing, I think comes more, it's kind of slightly more western, I think. The open world stuff is a bit kind of between the two. I think it's both sides of the coin are kind of working more towards open world stuff, but so I think Link's another character you can put a picture up, and a lot of people, definitely within gaming, but in general, I think could point out, oh, he's from Zelda, or he's a Nintendo character. So yeah, Link is another iconic Japanese character. Next up, I've got Mega Man on this list. Mega Man was, I think, trying to aim for the heights of like Mario and Sonic, and never quite got there. He has got a very strong cult following. He's a Capcom property. The Mega Man 9's most recent kind of standalone game that he had, and a lot of people were really excited when it first got announced and really enjoyed it. Yeah, I like playing it, so yeah, I think Mega Man is pretty cool. I had a lot of fun with him. And again, it's just like, because of having gameplay innovations in his games and things like that. So I know in Mega Man 9, you can get various effects that could affect stuff like speed or time and things like that. But again, he's still pretty recognisable. He's still quite a big deal, like with Super Smash Bros. For a year and for 3DS. When he got announced, when the game was announced, he did have quite a good reaction, quite a positive reaction. A lot of people were excited to see him, which is good. Next up, I'm going to move across to Namco. Another character way back in the arcades is Pac-Man. Pac-Man is, Pac-Man's an interesting character. Again, he's evolved over time. Definitely evolved more, and he's well beloved. There's always new games coming out with Pac-Man. They're normally a lot of fun. Also, you got the likes of Pac-Man 99 has come out on the Nintendo Switch actually in the last couple of weeks. So a lot of people are really kind of still getting into Pac-Man, still liking Pac-Man. Classic gameplay. It's a bit of kind of retro fun, a bit of old school fun, which is pretty cool. Pac-Man is is instantly recognisable. And again, I think it's a game that everyone's kind of played at least once. Which is a pretty awesome thing. The next Japanese characters I'm going to talk about are probably a bit more niche. Kind of less popular or less well known, I think. But it's like the cast. It's the cast of Super Monkey Ball. Most people from like the GameCube era onwards would kind of should recognise the Super Monkey Ball characters. I've had games on all the major consoles, like game like from the GameCube, Xbox and PlayStation kind of era. Super Monkey Ball, I say they're not instantly standout characters. But I think they're characters that you certainly remember playing, especially if you play other games. So you've got like AA, Mimi, Baby and Gongon, all very unique characters, their own personalities and stuff like that. So Super Monkey Ball is a game that I do keep on going back to. It just really kind of draws me in and I enjoy it a lot. It's just the characters do stick with me sometimes. I think there was one game they tried to add another couple of monkeys in, but they never didn't really last. It's kind of reverted back to the original four. There's like a little group that are all pretty cool. I've got one last mention I'm going to say for the kind of more family friendly kind of overall characters, and this is going to be Sora from Kingdom Hearts. I think Kingdom Hearts is a fairly successful franchise. It is a kind of, it's Disney and Square coming together. So a mixture of Final Fantasy and Disney properties. And Sora's been a well-loved part that's been created from Kingdom Hearts. Now, he's the main protagonist of a lot of the games. If you ask people who they want to see in Smash, he more often than not gets mentioned and brought up as as someone they'd love to see in Smash. Whether or not that will happen remains to be seen, although we are running out of spaces in the current Smash Brothers game. So it's pretty iconic. He's got his Keyblade, which is quite an iconic weapon. Obviously, quite the black spiky hair, red trousers. A lot of people do really like Sora. He's quite, he has got quite a big following of people who enjoy his games and like him. I think in terms of Japanese, family characters and iconic characters, I think there are quite a few. But likewise, if you move across to the West, there are several that are well-known and iconic. So I'm going to start talking about some of the Western characters. This is kind of obviously the same kind of genres, quite platformers or kind of family-friendly kind of games. So I'm going to go through a lot of the also the characters I've got written down. I'll say there are a couple of omissions, especially from the Nintendo ones, that I'm going to talk about after I've talked about this group of Western characters. Purely because I think they cross the bridge between East and West, Japan and the West pretty well. First character I'm going to mention from the Western front, and iconic, is Rayman. Rayman has been pretty consistent. He's been around for a fair few years, mostly come out to 25 years or so. First came out in the PlayStation era. We got Rayman with the limbless wonder, as some people called him. There's Rayman 2 or Rayman 3 that pretty much ended up on pretty much every single console. It got ported so many times. But a lot of the games are a lot of fun. The first Rayman was a 2D side-scroller. It was pretty awesome, quite inventive in places. Also was quite generic in some places as well. And Rayman 2 and Rayman 3 were more 3D, and there's Rayman 3D as well, I think. They moved him into the 3D platforming era. Before I played with him, they did have some fun moments. They're pretty cool. A pretty cool moveset, using his hair as a helicopter, and obviously, you charge out the punches. Then Rayman kind of just disappeared for quite a few years. I did a spin-off, because I like Raving Rabbids, and they reintroduced the Rabbid characters. They kind of took over the Rayman space, because Ubisoft didn't really use the Rayman characters, which is a bit of a shame. Every time they announced a Rabbids game, there was always Rayman going to be in it, because it was kind of tutors is like the same thing. Especially to start with, then they kind of broke away to their own kind of franchise. But then they did bring Rayman back in Rayman Origins and Rayman Legends. Rayman Legends is absolutely amazing. I absolutely love that game. I had it on the Wii U, which I think is one of the better ways to play the game. So I think it was designed to be used with a gamepad. It was originally going to be a Wii U exclusive until the Wii U didn't take off quite as well as it should have done, and they ended up porting the game to quite a few different consoles. Rayman Legends in particular, it's got some amazing level designs. There's a couple of levels which are like music rhythm based kind of thing. It works so well. It can be quite a punishing platformer, but it is kind of, it's never unfair. Like, if you make a mistake, it's one that you definitely made. Like, you can't argue way out of them, like, the deaths. Next up, we've got a couple of characters that are very much kind of the same era, same kind of caliber, and have had sort of comebacks recently. That is Crash Bandicoot and Spyro the Dragon. I'm kind of bulking them together because they are kind of fairly similar now in terms of their notoriety and kind of how iconic they are. I'd argue that the Crash is probably a bit more recognisable because he's had a few more games and has been around a bit longer as well. Crash made a comeback with the Insane Trilogy, which is the first of the games remastered, which is awesome. It's one of the main reasons I got a PS4, to be honest. So I thought it was going to be exclusive to PlayStation, then it came out on other consoles about a year later. But the Insane Trilogy is a great game. It led the way for Crash Team Racing to be remastered, and also for Crash 4, It's About Time to be released. So I've not played Crash 4 yet. It does look like a lot of fun. They have changed outside of the game playing mechanics, I think. So they've graded different things in and different abilities, which looks kind of cool. It's a character that kind of had a bit of a rocky patch a few years ago and did kind of die off a little bit and didn't do much. But like I say, the last few years have seen a resurgence in Crash. And so there is Spyro. Spyro was pretty successful in the PlayStation era. Well known, pretty recognisable. And PS2 era had a few more games, and then he kind of disappeared a bit. I think they kind of brought in Skylanders, which is technically in his universe, but then they kind of moved Spyro out of it and made it all about Skylanders. And then when the Toys to Life craze started to die down a bit, Skylanders kind of fizzled out. And then I think they started looking at Spyro again. They obviously did the Reignited Trilogy. Spyro is a pretty classic character. Like, I've been playing the Reignited Trilogy recently. I do really enjoy it, and it's a great game. I've only really played the first Spyro game. I've not moved on to the other two games in the trilogy. But I've been having fun running around and having fun and exploring, and it's quite a challenging little platformer in places. Like, try to find all the sequence, you have to do some perfect kind of jumps and platforming. It can be tough, which is pretty interesting and pretty cool. Next character I'm going to bring up in this category is, again, one that is pretty iconic, but not really done much in terms of their own game recently. And that's Banjo-Kazooie. Got an interesting kind of history, really. They started off with Nintendo. They're developed by Rare, who developed and created Banjo-Kazooie. Then when Microsoft bought Rare, they went across to Microsoft. Microsoft have attempted to do another game in the form of Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, which I think is where Rare is having a little bit of time readjusting and kind of getting used to what's going on, and they had lost some of their original staff. So I think they're trying to get back the feel of the game. So Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts didn't do as well as some of the other games, so they have been a bit kind of not left behind, but they've not really had much in the way of new games. They've not had any new games since then. They did have a massive resurgence in 2019 when they were added to Super Smash Bros. They made it into the DLC, and Sakurai admitted that if they were sort of Nintendo, they would have been in a couple of games ago at least. But yeah, they were a lot of fun. Again, they were kind of instantly recognisable. Created in the UK by Rare. And yeah, it was really cool to see them turn up in Smash. I've got the Amiibo turned up about a month ago, so that's pretty cool. Yeah, Banjo-Kazooie is, like I say, they've not done much recently, but they are fairly recognisable. And moving on to the next character, or characters, like, again, they've not had any new games for quite a while now. And that is Jak and Daxter. Jak and Daxter in the PS2 era were pretty big. They're kind of the big new IP for Sony, created by Naughty Dog. That was pretty solid platformers, to be fair. I really enjoyed playing them. There's got three games in the main trilogy. I think Daxter had his own spin-off on the PSP. Yeah, so PS2 era, they were pretty iconic. They were pretty well known. But again, they haven't really kind of carried on. Sony seems to have let them fall by the wayside a bit. Whereas I think they could be quite popular if they were looked after properly and had some good games. I know Naughty Dog were asked recently about Jak and Daxter, like, could they do another game? Naughty Dog did admit it would be a challenge because it's quite different to the kind of games they're used to making now. They understand that there is a demand for Jak and Daxter, and they would enjoy the challenge of making a Jak and Daxter game, but they aren't currently looking to make a new one, so. Unfortunately, it looks like Jak and Daxter isn't likely to be making a comeback unless Sony puts it to someone else. But like I said, they're a duo would like to see come back. Because duos are kind of making a bit of a comeback, especially in the form of Ukulele, created by Playtonic Games, which is made up of a fair few former Rare employees who have been, who decided they wanted to make an old school platformer, so they made Ukulele. There have been two games in the Ukulele series. I haven't really included them in this list yet, or wasn't going to include them in this list because they've not been around as long as a lot of the other characters, or as established as the other characters. Just kind of a look at how duos are making a bit of a comeback. And talk about that, the last Western kind of family game character I'm going to talk about is Ratchet and Clank. Ratchet and Clank is a pretty strong duo for Sony and PlayStation, to be fair. The kind of remake Ratchet and Clank game is pretty well received. I've really enjoyed it. I've managed to get it on sale, I think, so I got it quite cheaply. I really enjoy it. I think it's a pretty solid game, pretty decent, a lot of fun, and they are still quite relevant because they've obviously got their game coming out in June, Rift Apart, and it is one of the most anticipated PlayStation games this year. A lot of people were looking over Sony's next release, Returnal, just because of the excitement for Ratchet and Clank. So Sony have got a pretty strong character there. They were actually created by Insomniac, which Sony now do own. I think they originally had them in partnership with Sony, but obviously Sony brought out Insomniac games. Again, quite an iconic duo. And they seem to be getting more and more popularity, especially of how good Rift Apart looked in terms of showing off the PlayStation 5's capabilities. But yeah, it'll be exciting to see how they get going. Because I think one thing about some of these Western characters, they do sometimes have periods where they drop off. They haven't been consistent. They haven't had games consistently coming out. which is a bit of a shame. So as well, they've got the longevity or the continuity that some of the Japanese characters have. Yeah, it makes it an interesting composition point. So all the characters I've mentioned so far in terms of like the iconic characters or kind of family kind of game or kind of all-round characters, who do you think's got the most staying power? Who do you think's more consistent with being relevant and in the gaming industry kind of sphere, rather than being like a retro game or something that people look back on? I keep on hoping that another Rayman game's gonna be coming soon. So I'd love to see more of him, and obviously the Spyro Ignited Trilogy, I'd love to see a new Spyro game. But again, it's just yeah, it's whether they carry on or whether they kind of left by the wayside a bit more. There was two kind of characters in this spiel I did say I was going to talk about separately. And they are actually both Nintendo characters. Obviously got Donkey Kong, created by Nintendo and Shigeru Miyamoto back in the 80s. But if you look at most of his successful games, they were actually Western developed. Donkey Kong Country was developed by Rare. So the first three games there were developed by Rare. And then Donkey Kong Country Returns and Tropical Freeze were both by Retro Studios, which are American. So yeah, it's quite interesting that we've had the biggest games from Donkey Kong in terms of popularity and notoriety have been Western developed, even though they're Japanese created game character. I know there are lots of other characters. I can know Sonic Adventure 2 at least is very much developed by Sonic Team America. So there are some examples like that where Western studios have developed more stuff. But yeah, I do think that Donkey Kong's most well-known games are legitimately by Western developers, which is an interesting thing to take into account, really. And okay, I know Microsoft's been looking over the games and kind of testing them out and making suggestions and that, but it's the fact that they've allowed their characters to be handled by these development studios. The next one I'm going to talk about is Samus Aran for all Metroid. Obviously, Metroid started off in Japan. The 2D games, a lot of them have been developed in Japan. Samus Aran is very iconic. It was a big bombshell moment for gamers when they discovered that Samus Aran is actually a lady, or female. So yeah, it's pretty cool that she's had quite a good impact, and she's not Nintendo's biggest franchise, but she is quite a long-lasting one, and one that fans do get excited about still. But her most notable games recently have been the Metroid Prime games, and they were developed by Retro Studios. So again, Retro Studios is an American company. Yeah, and Samus Aran's biggest or some of her most revered games were developed by a Western company, and they obviously did take the game in a very different direction. They made it into a first-person exploration shooter game, which a lot of people were quite concerned about, but I think they did make it work really well. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they get with Metroid Prime 4 when that finally comes out. But yeah, like I said, it's interesting to see the different approach and how Western companies can take Japanese characters and do great stuff with them. Next, I'm going to talk about some more kind of adult characters, like less kind of happy-go-lucky platformy ones. So a bit more dark, if you will, or a bit more kind of gritty or like adult content, perhaps. Yeah, so I'm going to look at a couple of those characters quickly and just kind of how they have the staying power compared to each other, really. Okay, so first up, I'm going to start with the wrestling characters this time. So I'm going to talk with some more kind of recent or kind of more gritty kind of, well, like, more gritty kind of characters. And these are, I'm going to start off with Master Chief, obviously the protagonist of Halo, well known and well recognised. Even though he's a first-person shooter character, a lot of people instantly recognise him when they see his suit. Master Chief has had a lot of staying power. He's been fairly consistent as well with game releases. He is probably recognised as Microsoft's kind of mascot, if you consider Mario to be Nintendo's and Sonic to be Sega's kind of thing. It's interesting to say who Sony's would be. Right now I'd say potentially Astro or Ratchet and Clank, so obviously where Activision now owned Crash Bandicoot and Spyro, it's not really going to be one of those. So yeah, in terms of a mascot, it's interesting to see who Sony have got. Master Chief is, like I say, he's a well-known character. I think he will always be around as well. I think he's one of those characters that has got staying power and lasting power. Obviously, originally created by Bungie. Western developer there. He's a pretty cool character. He's pretty iconic. Next up, I'm going to talk about Lara Croft. Technically owned by Square Enix now, which is a Japanese company, but originally created by Crystal Dynamics and Eidos. Lara Croft has been around since the mid-90s, debuting on the Sega Saturn and then kind of moving across to PlayStation, where she kind of built up her reputation. Again, she's not been consistent. There was a period of time where she wasn't really around. And then Square Enix kind of did the Tomb Raider reboot games. We had like Tomb Raider, Rise of Tomb Raider, and Shadow of the Tomb Raider. So that kind of trilogy. I'm not too sure there's anything else coming at the moment Tomb Raider wise, so she may have kind of had a bit more of a lull. I think Lara Croft has had kind of a few waves and kind of being in and then kind of fading away, then being in again and fading away. Tomb Raider's, like I said, it's an iconic game series. Lara Croft is, again, one of those recognisable characters. It's had three films based on the property, two starring Angelina Jolie. As I said, well recognised and, yeah, pretty memorable in terms of character design and characters. That's what I'm going to talk about in terms of Western is, I'm going to talk about Assassin's Creed. There's like two main characters I really want to talk about here. That's Altair and Ezio. The two kind of historic characters from the first Assassin's Creed and kind of Assassin's Creed 2 and its various spin-offs. Edge is probably the more recognisable and more well known and well used character from Assassin's Creed. but the Assassin's Creed concept was pretty awesome. Putting you back in time in different places and different scenarios. It's always a lot of fun. I think I include Altair because that's my first example of Assassin's Creed. I really enjoyed it. Really kind of loved it. And because it was like the first kind of open world game I kind of played, it was kind of a big eye opener for me in a way. I really kind of enjoyed Altair as a character. Assassin's Creed, I think I have kind of lost my passion for it in recent years. I can enjoy the games, I enjoy the settings, but I think in general, the Assassin's Creed kind of quality has kind of dipped a bit, and a lot of people are more kind of not finding it central playing kind of thing. I know Valhalla last year did have quite a big comeback. It was a pretty successful and pretty popular game, pretty well talked about. Next up I'm going to move across to CD Projekt Red. And talk about Geralt from The Witcher 3. I've not really played The Witcher 3, but he is character's definitely getting a lot of recognition. He is a character that's been focused on in the Netflix series, with Henry Cavill taking the role of him. I think he's one of my recent open world games' most recognisable characters recently. Definitely CD Projekt Red's most recognisable character, I think. And he was kind of moved across to Soul Calibur 6, I think, as a playable character. There's a lot of interesting developments, the fact that he's being used for different things. Like I said, I don't know whether he will last the test of time. He may actually just be in The Witcher 3, and that'll be kind of what I use him for. I might not use him in any further Witcher games. Whether he's got longevity and kind of stays around will be interesting to see. Next character I'm going to mention is Nathan Drake. A fairly recent addition in terms of characters. Again, he is a Sony character. I think he kind of helped try and fill the void that Tomb Raider left, where it died off for a bit. Sony did, with Naughty Dog, did try and do their own kind of Tomb Raider style game. Played the fourth game in the series, A Stranger's End, or Feast's End, I think. Nathan Drake's quite an interesting character. He's quite a cool character. But it will be interesting to see, again, how long he lasts. I know he's been in four games in the Uncharted series. I'm interested to see if they carry on the series much more. I know he will be kind of recognisable with the upcoming Uncharted movie, because Tom Holland is meant to be playing a younger version of him. That'd be interesting to see how that goes across and how well that succeeds. In terms of moving away from like the all-rounder platformer kind of characters, I think there are a lot of characters which stand out, but are also, I think, unlikely to have the same kind of longevity as the all-round characters or the Japanese characters we talked about. The Master Chief is probably why the and Lara Croft are probably the only ones among that list that are probably likely to definitely be around for quite a while to come. Like I say, I'm going to move to the Japan side in a second. Aware that time's getting on, so I'm going to mention some of the Japanese characters I've kind of picked out. Obviously, these are more kind of adult or kind of more niche kind of games or genres. First, I'm going to mention, I think it goes without saying in terms of video characters, and especially Japanese, Cloud Strife, and in some regards, Sephiroth from Final Fantasy VII. Final Fantasy VII is one of the most renowned JRPGs of all time. It is the game that made the series blow up in the West. It was very much a Japan-only kind of... most in Japan, but not quite so much in the West before Final Fantasy VII. Final Fantasy VII did kind of blow a lot of people away. And Cloud Strife's the kind of character that you see and you know. A lot of people do really like the character. I think Cloud Strife is a pretty iconic Japanese character. I'm good in this section because he is more like an RPG and obviously a bit more of a gritty RPG. So where Kingdom Hearts is quite kind of happy-go-lucky Disney kind of, probably dark in places, but not that dark, I think. Final Fantasy VII, where you got obviously bombings and all kind of stuff like that, it can be quite dark and quite interesting in places. Next up, I think it's a bit more niche. Probably not as iconic as some, but it's Bayonetta. Bayonetta is definitely built up a very cult, very much a cult following. She's well loved and well respected in her community. The games are very well expected, like Bayonetta 2 scored 10 out of 10 in Edge, which are pretty often renowned to be one of the harshest game critics in terms of review scores. So to get a 10 out of 10 in Edge, you really need to do something pretty spectacular. Bayonetta, I think the great thing about Bayonetta is she's got the sass, she's got the style, and she's unique, like the way she works, like the way she uses weapons. So there's two guns, and she has guns attached to her heels as well. It's pretty kind of badass. And also, I think something that is quite Japanese in times is the sex appeal. Because she has got that sexiness and that kind of style around her, she is kind of pretty standout. Next character I'm going to talk about is Ryo Hayabusa, star of the Ninja Gaiden series, and also appears in the Dead or Alive fighting game series. To be fair, the Dead or Alive fighting game series does have some pretty iconic characters and designs. So you got like Helena, Asuka is one of them. There's a lot of great fighters and character design in there. Ninja Gaiden and Ryu Hayabusa are iconic games. Ryu Hayabusa is a character that keeps on being asked for in the Smash Brothers. I know it'd be another sword character, but a lot of people would like to see him in there. You got quite a cool moveset. It's not very many times you see like a ninja character that's had good staying power. He has kind of been quiet for like almost the last 7 or 8 years, to be fair. But he has got his Sigma trilogy coming out in June, so they are releasing 3 games in one pack in June, which is pretty cool. see him make a bit of a comeback, and see how that goes down. He's got a pretty cool design, all black costume. He's got his katana beams. And yeah, he's got a pretty cool moveset, and a lot of people do kind of really like the character. Is he like the most memorable character out of Japan? No, he's not. But he is one that a lot of people do like and do like playing his games. So yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that goes down, really. Next one I'm going to bring up is one that I think Matt would be very disappointed I didn't mention, is a character called Solid Snake. Yeah, Metal Gear Solid. Hideo Kojima's kind of passion project in some regards. But Solid Snake is a massively well-recognised character. I know they have changed the design a few times in terms of different games and where they are in terms of timeline. Yeah, it's like a tough soldier. Depending on what game you play, depends on his kind of skills and kind of expertise. Obviously, Snake Eater, like the third one, was kind of like a survival one. Solid Snake is, again, one of those iconic characters that you do recognise from a lot of games. I know when he first came out on Smash Brothers like 10 years ago, longer than 10 years ago now. It's like big news for him to make Smash Brothers. Everyone's really excited. And then he finally came back in Smash Brothers Ultimate. A lot of people were happy to see him again, so it shows that he does have that following that people are kind of really happy to see him show up and stuff. So, the Metal Gear Solid series has got a bit more rocky, especially with Kojima leaving Konami. Konami have only done quite one Metal Gear Solid game after, really, and it's not really worked out very well. There are a lot of rumours going around that Konami are kind of licensing out the franchise. There are rumours there is a remake being made by someone for the PS5. Exactly who or whether it's actually happening, does vary depending who you listen to. Metal Gear Solid could be making a comeback in terms of a remake. But again, it'd be interesting to see what happens if it does actually come to fruition. Like I say, Snake is quite an iconic character. A lot of classic kind of looks, and his codex bit's quite iconic. Solid character there. Next one I'm going to talk about is Ryo Suzuki. The protagonist of Shenmue. Shenmue is very much a cult classic, but it has got a very strong fandom. For example, a few years ago when they announced a Kickstarter for Shenmue 3, it flew past its goal literally in days. It kept going and going and going. Regardless of what your thoughts are on Shenmue 3, whether you think it's worth it or whether it's disappointment, it's a different thing altogether. But the fact it was such a passion project for a lot of people, and so people were so desperate to see how it carried on, means that, he's an iconic Japanese character. A lot of people do love him and recognise him, and do have a lot of passion for his game. So it's interesting to see how different characters capture different people. I just thought I'd touch on some icons, so some gaming legends between East and West. I think it would have done more kind of work on this. Could have made it more of a comparison kind of thing, but I just wanted to give like get you thinking about who do you think is more most memorable about those kind of those characters. So the Japanese side, you do have the bona fide legends, which have their surrounding cast, like Mario, Sonic, the Zelda cast. as we even start getting to the fighting games, like the cast of Virtua Fighter, Tekken, Soul Calibur, Fighting Vipers, their fighting games have got pretty iconic rosters. Whereas with the Western side, you obviously got the likes of the Mortal Kombat cast, like Crash, Banjo, Kazooie, Spyro. There's a lot of very memorable characters from either side. But I have to say, I think in terms of more memorable and kind of iconic, I think for me, I think Japan has it kind of thing. Because I think some of the Western characters aren't always consistent with releases. Okay, I know a lot of the Japanese characters also aren't. For example, Metroid hasn't seen a new game in quite a few years. I've had a couple of remakes. Metroid Prime Federation Force, kind of a spin-off. So Metroid Prime 4, when it does turn up, will be its kind of next big project. It has been since the Wii days since we've had that kind of thing, which is a weird thought and kind of a scary thought. Let me know what you're thinking. Like, please tweet me or kind of message me and let me know what you think about what kind of gaming characters kind of stand out for you. Like, these lists are by no means exhaustive. Like, there are characters that stand out to different people. Like, characters don't stand out to me, but I stand out to you a lot more. I just wanted to list like characters from Japan and from Western developers that do kind of stick out and are notable in my eyes, kind of thing. I'm going to kind of wrap up now. I'm going to have a quick talk about what I've been playing and where you can find me and bits like that. So the last couple of weeks, what I've been playing a bit more Forza Horizon 4, actually. My Xbox, I've always had a bit of a love-hate thing. Like, I've got an external hard drive, not an SSD one. But with the external hard drive, it is kind of a bit temperamental at the moment. So, I might have to get a new hard drive. So, unfortunately, I can't really do much with... I've been trying to throw outside the games and uploads, but it always seems to be updating, or if depends whether my hard drive's kind of disconnected itself or not, means whether I can carry straight on or not, or play much. So I've been doing the Forza Horizon 4. Tetris Effect Connect I've been getting into again. Like, I've been playing quite a bit of the connected multiplayer mode online. It's a lot of fun. Especially when you got a good team, you kind of know how to play it and look for the right, the kind of gel with you and their kind of patterns where they put things. Obviously Animal Crossing and the Switch. Bit of Smash Brothers as well, playing a couple of rounds of that here and there. And Tetris 99 and also Pac-Man 99, the new Pac-Man game. I'm really enjoying that. It's a lot of fun. I'd say Pac-Man, I've not got the natural affinity like I have for Tetris. So it's a bit more challenging for me, although I think Matt from Game Junkies has been really enjoying Pac-Man 99, been really getting into it. That's my next segue. So please don't forget to check out Matt, Alex and Kerry next week if they're about with the Game Junkies podcast. Never normally a dull moment with those guys, so... they're well worth checking out, alongside their Dungeons & Junkies podcast, where they're joined by Caitlin, Chad and A-League. Like, there's a lot of fun on there as well. I've heard some of the stuff that's coming up. With some of the recording sessions have been going on. So, yeah, some fun stuff coming up for you to listen to with the Dungeons & Junkies stuff. Yeah, so in terms of finding me, you've got my YouTube channel, Chris Reactor, all one words and OR at the end. And my Twitter is at ChrisTheRis37. So you can add me on Twitter. I do share all my videos to Twitter. So if you want to follow my YouTube channel, best way is that you go to my Twitter and then follow a link and subscribe and comment and all that good stuff on YouTube. But yeah, thank you for listening. I feel like I kind of rambled a bit. It's probably not the most exciting 50th episode you've ever heard of a podcast, but hey, yeah, when I get started talking about games, I kind of don't stop, really, so anyway, thank you for listening, you still are. Until next time, speak to you soon, bye.
This podcast is a Matt Attack production for Visionaries Global Media.